whenever you make a change, you make decisions. So one of the decisions I made when I made a change was I did not want the next 5 years of my life to be like the last five.
Podcasting from WealthWave Studios in Johns Creek, Georgia, this is Leadership Now, the official vision and strategy podcast of WealthWave.
We're here today on Leadership Now with our special guest, Bill Mitchell. This is our special Fiji edition. We're here on the island of Fiji with all the elite winners from the World Quest Tour that we're here on this contest that we had. And you guys know Bill Mitchell doesn't need an introduction. Bill is a senior executive vice chairman with our firm and been around here for a long time, going on 26 years. And been one of the many leaders in our company to dominate the company. And I think that what we're going to talk about today could be something that could really give your business exactly what you need to become successful. So Bill, first of all, welcome to our show today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about how you got started, because I think a lot of people would like to know, you know, what someone like you have so much success and such a big team. A lot of times people don't realize how you got started and what that really looks like. One thing I want to point out to everybody, that here in the next few weeks, Bill and I will be celebrating our 30th anniversary of working together. Hmm. And there aren't many relationships of any kind that last three decades, but this one has. And not only has it lasted that way, we've always been great friends and always had just a lot of fun doing this business together, and started with absolutely nothing. Some of you don't realize that back in the day, Bill and I used to be roommates and live together. And we were both single and trying to figure this business out together. And as I think about those times, I mean, I remember when you and I first started having the conversations about doing this. And one of the things that I want to point out to everybody that I think is so important is the first three meetings you and I had scheduled, you blew me off. You were busy. You were living in Columbus, Ohio, working an old line life.
Mm-hmm.
And you were supposed to come down and see me. And we were going to have lunch. One time it was at Frisch's. I think the other two were somewhere else. And you no-showed. And when I tried to call you, you know, that was back when a phone was a place, so I had to guess where you were. And when I called, you didn't answer. And there's a real lesson we learned in that I didn't give up. And you eventually took my call. And at some point, we got together and started talking more about it. And it was about a six-month process when we first started talking about this,
right,
through you finally saying yes. But as we talk about that, what were those times like for you? You were with Old Line Life, you're in Columbus, you're running the lead system, going out making sales, very, very small team.
Yeah, right.
What was that like?
Well, actually, let me go back a little further than that. You asked me about when I got in the business. You know, I got in the business, I was working as an engineer at Cincinnati Millicron. And I mean, I remember very clearly, I was playing in a racquetball tournament, and I was watching the next match. And Kip Keller, who is one of my best friends, his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, came up to me, and I'm watching the next match, and she said, "Kip would love to get you in his business, but he knows you're happy being an engineer." And I remember looking at her, just looking to my right and saying, "I hate engineering." But I just never told anybody that. I just didn't like it. But I felt trapped, and I'd already been thinking about maybe doing something else, but you know, obviously you don't know what to do. You're trained as that, and you get a job, and it seems to be a great job, and it was just wasn't great for me. You know, like anything, when you first get started, you're excited about it at first, and then reality sets in, and you realize that there's a whole lot more to life than that. You don't want your life, and you either can accept it or you can do something about it. But I don't know what to do, so I sat down with Kip. And that's how I got started in the business part-time. And then, I'd spent about 9 years doing that, pretty much around nine
part-time.
Years, part-time. And I was full-time for part of it. But I didn't have 9 years experience. I really only had 1 year experience nine times. So keep that in mind. That just because somebody's been around doing something for a while doesn't mean they have that many years experience. A lot of times it's the same experience just over and over again. And you're just not getting anywhere. So anyway, you and I talked, and we actually went to the same high school together, and we met at a
Christmas party.
Yeah, at a Christmas party. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? So anyway.
Well, I'm playing my trumpet at that party, and you walked in and said, "Who's that goofy guy playing the trumpet?" And then we...
I don't think I verbalized that.
Yeah, right. And then we ended up downstairs at your famous pool table and talking and just...
You showed me the business plan.
And I had a $100,000 ring from that company, and you weren't quite there yet. You were probably a little less than half that.
Yeah, probably. I was probably making $50,000-$60,000 a year, working like I was making $500. I should have been making $500 as hard as I thought I was working anyway.
Right. And we just got to talking about it, and I think one of the things that I noticed right away is that you were spending a lot of time by yourself. You know, you were running a lead system, and so you were orchestrating the leads and calling mm-hmm. them and making calls and setting appointments and running on appointments. And I think you had maybe one or two or three people working with you.
Well, actually, I had more than that. The challenge was it was a revolving door.
Yeah.
Because that system didn't allow you to really keep your good people. In fact, the general agency system in general has a systemic issue, and that is you can't keep any good people because the good people don't want to work for you. They don't want to be under you.
Right.
Which is really what I saw here, that this system solved that issue. But anyway.
That you could attract somebody sharp and they would have more incentive to stay than to leave.
Right.
And it would allow them to grow and really become a leader of their own while still being part of your business.
Well, you know what happens is, I remember when I went out on my own and I became, quote unquote, a general agent, I had the conversation with my general agent. I walked in his office and I said, Marvin, I've been thinking. And what I was thinking was, I don't need you anymore. That's exactly what I was thinking. And then one by one, people came into my office and said the same thing to me.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with friendship. It had nothing to do with the products. It had nothing to do with compensation on the base level, but it had to do with people wanting to run their own show, and they couldn't do it in that system. And that's the general issue overall. That's one of the reasons I left Millicron and left the quote-unquote job is how fast can you move up? You're limited. There's not unlimited opportunity at the top. And that might seem a little trite to say here, but there's always room at the top here. There's unlimited opportunity at the top here.
Well, you get out of high school, even a high school like St. X, and you end up having to pick something you want to study, just guessing what you might want to do when you grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And you picked engineering, went to Purdue, one of America's great engineering schools. And all of a sudden, I think you started realizing, maybe you can let us hear, but I think you were sensing that may not be what you wanted to do the rest of your life.
You get pigeonholed. You take a test. Maybe you get good in a subject or two, and somebody says, hey, you'd be good at this. And, of course, it sounds good because you don't know anything.
Right.
And then you get out in the real world, and you realize there's just so much more to it. And I'm very thankful that I had an open mind, and I listened, because if once you get trapped into something, Bruce Springsteen says it perfectly. He's in one of his songs, he said, sooner or later, it just becomes your life. And the question is whether you accept that or not.
Right.
And fortunately, I wasn't willing to accept it, and I found a way out. There's a couple parts to that. There's one is you're not willing to accept something, and the other part is you got to find a way out.
Right, right. And when you did this, you didn't start and get licensed and just go straight to the top.
Oh.
You said you had all those years experience doing the same thing over and over again. Did you ever feel like quitting?
No, not really. I never really wanted to quit. I'll be very frank with you. I never felt like quitting because I already knew that if I quit, I already knew what the other side had, which was a job, and I wasn't going back to that. So I knew I could make it work, and I just concentrated on me personally getting better. But in some systems, like the one I was in, there was no amount of personally getting better. I mean, I would have reached just a different plateau. The nice thing about what we do here is you can personally get better, and you get into the building business, not just the sales business, not just the recruiting business. You actually get in the building business. There's no limit to what you can accomplish here, as evidenced by us and by a bunch of other leaders in our company. But the answer is no, I never felt like quitting. Now, was I frustrated? Sure, everybody gets frustrated. Do you have bad days? Absolutely. There's no perfect business. There's no problem-free business. You're going to be frustrated. That's part of change. That's part of growing. And so, yes, I was frustrated, but I was never frustrated to the point where I wanted to throw in the towel. And that's probably maybe a difference. you know, you're either committed or you're not. And 1,000% commitment, which is one of the first ingredients, first prerequisites of success. And you got to build that commitment. And if you make a commitment that you're going to go out and build something and you're going to plant your flag and build something big here, you have got to, if you have a fleeting thought, you've got to get it out of your mind. And let me talk about that a second.
Sure.
It's natural for everybody to have thoughts. It's like if you meet somebody, you have a first thought about them. Or if you have a bad day and you have a thought and you say, well, maybe I'm not good at this or something like that. You can't really help your first thought. The first thought's the first thought. It's the second thought that counts. So in other words, you're having a bad day and all of a sudden you have a thought and you say, or maybe you have a string of bad days. You might even have a bad month. I remember in personal sales, I went the whole month of August one time when I was living on my own up in Columbus, and I thought I was working pretty hard, but I didn't have one client come on board in the whole month of August, and I was running appointments. Extreme case of just bad luck. And for whatever reason, I didn't have any, and that was frustrating. But the first thought is, okay, you might say, well, maybe this isn't for me. But the second thought is, okay, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to throw in the towel? Am I going to give up on my dreams? Am I going to go back to the same old, same old? Well, I didn't like the same old, same old. And so I never thought about that. So even if I did have a first thought of frustration and quitting, which everybody, I guess, would have, I don't remember if I did have it. I know it wasn't the second thought for sure.
Well, you know, I remember when I first got started and we started the company here, and I was having a conversation with my leader, and we started talking about what size team I wanted to have, and I was describing what I thought was going to be a big team and the process to do that. And he made a suggestion that my plan was to be a perfect plan to have a small team. And then I needed to have a big event, and I needed to invite everybody to it and call everybody and get them all there. And so I did, and I had 125 people come to a meeting within just a few weeks of getting the company started. And you were one of my guests.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You sat in the second row right in the front, and I was nervous as could be and got up there.
Sixth row,
okay, and introduced the meeting. And I remember afterwards you said you said this looked pretty good, and
we'll get back with you.
Well, you were with another one of my friends, and you two guys were like two friends, two competitors. But you were both underneath me in previous businesses, and all of a sudden he went this way and you went this way.
Well, the actual conversation was, I remember by the escalator, we both shook your hand and say, oh yeah, looks good, we'll get back with you. As we're walking down the escalator, we both said to each other, I remember I specifically said, I don't think those boys are going to make it as right. We're going down the escalator.
Right.
And but the key on that was, which is interesting, and there's a lot of lessons in this, that first of all, you mentioned that I blew off the first few appointments, but that didn't stop you. And look, something I learned this early on in the business, most of the time, no means not yet. Typically, no just means not yet. Now, sometimes no is no, but usually it means not yet because the timing is not right. And so when we first talked, and I was not totally happy with what I was doing, but I wasn't unhappy enough to change yet. So, and I was unsure of what you were going to do because this was new.
Right.
So there's part of it. So one part of it is I'm unhappy, but am I unhappy enough to change? The other part is, okay, this looks great. What are you going to do? And even though I may not have consciously said that, subconsciously, that's what you think. So we went walking down the escalator or taking the escalator down, and I said, I don't think those boys are going to make it. But what you did was you kept in touch.
Yeah.
And you kept contacting. And the other thing was I saw progress. You kept me informed of your progress. And make a note of this in a pleasantly persistent way, right. Not an overt way, not an obnoxious way, not an over the top way, a pleasantly persistent way. And it was a constant contact. Now, when I say constant contact, it wasn't every day, but it was every week or two or three all the time. We'd play basketball together.
Right.
Back when you could play some basketball.
Oh my gosh.
And, so we just kept in contact. And what I saw was all the things that the company said they were going to do, they were doing.
Right.
And then something else happened. I became more unhappy with where I was.
Right.
And here's the other key. You have the feeling, you know something? I'm going to miss out on something big here. And that right there is really big.
Well, and I had been able to have enough success early that you looked at my success, and within just a month or two, I caught where you were already.
Mm-hmm.
And I was moving beyond, and you were thinking, I'm going to get left behind.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real factor with people. And so one of the things I'm so excited about as we go forward now, all these years later, is that we have enough people making enough money right now that if they'll just make enough contacts and let people know where they are and what they've done, that's the most magnetic thing you can have. People get so excited about that. And I don't know why, but they think if you did it and they're with you, then they can do it.
What's your personal example? They see you moving forward. They see change. Look, everybody wants to change. Whether they admit it or not, everybody wants to change. Everybody wants to build a brand new you, a brand new themselves. Everybody wants to improve. Everybody sees themselves, you know, if they got any kinds of dreams at all, see themselves doing something bigger than they're doing now. Question is if they can do it where they're at, and most of the time they cannot. And it's just whether that reality sets in or not and whether they accept that reality or not. I was not willing to accept the reality. Was I uncomfortable enough to move at the time? No. And then, I mean, me personally, then I saw what you were doing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you say, you know something? There's something here. And all of a sudden your mind opens. So you end up changing a little bit. The person you're talking to, you as an individual, you know, if you're you know, recruiting somebody, you're bringing somebody on board, you're changing. And so what happens is you became a very good example.
Right. Was there an aha moment for you, like one thing that you remember in your mind that happened? That-
yeah, actually, I do remember.
Okay.
I do remember. I remember I was dropping off some mail at a...
overnight.
I think it was a mailbox. And so I pull in, and it's down the road from the office I was out of. I pull in the parking lot, and I see your car there in front of somebody's office. Well, I just can't help myself. So I drop off the mail. I go walking in, and I see you there and a guy named Jeff. And I said, what are you boys doing?
Right.
And then you started showing me how
the products work.
How the products worked. And I remember looking at that on because I never really saw it. And you had showed it to me, but because I didn't have as open a mind about it, it didn't sink in, just didn't register. And that's what happens with people. It just doesn't register. It's not that you said anything wrong. It just, whatever you said didn't register because I wasn't ready.
Right.
And, but then I looked at it and I'm like, oh, I see what you guys are doing. And that was kind of an aha moment. Is that what you were referring to, by the way?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Then, you know, so you come into the company and your previous track record had been to have kind of a modest team and do a lot of personal production.
Mm-hmm.
What point did you switch your mindset and then switch your business where you went from being that to being a big team builder and becoming the leader you are today?
Well, a couple things. One is whenever you make a change, you make decisions. So one of the decisions I made when I made a change was I did not want the next 5 years of my life to be like the last five. That's a decision you make. You can't come into something or you can't go embark on something and have it be same old, same old. Just like this plan that we're going to be unveiling here shortly, you can't take that thing for granted. You have to say to yourself, okay, I'm going to make the next year, I'm going to make the next 5 years go way better than the last five. And you're either serious about that decision or you're not. And then there's different degrees of seriousness about this decision. So I came in. And I was already doing sales, and I knew I had that down. And then, you know, we started, I mean, actually, you pushed it, because when I was doing my hiring pack, you asked me for some names, and I gave you a few names. You set an appointment with one of the names, I mean, almost right away. I don't even know if my hiring pack was in yet.
Right.
I think you had given it to me. I was going to fill it out. You asked me for three names. I gave you a few names. One of the names, in fact, the one you called and got an appointment with right away, I didn't even know. I'd got the name from somebody else.
Right.
So, and I said, hey, this guy, you know, I heard was possibly looking around and was looking to do something different. And you called him up. His name was Walter. And you set the appointment right in the middle of my family vacation. And, of course, the family vacation was with the in-laws because I didn't have enough money at the time to go on vacation on my own. And so we went with the in-laws. And so it was about a 6-hour drive away, roughly, 5.5 or 6-hour drive away. And you said it, I remember, on a Wednesday morning at 8 a.m.
I remember that.
Right smack in the middle of the vacation.
Right.
And so that wasn't real popular at home. But I had a decision to make on that. And this is big. First of all, I want you to think of the dynamics of this. I said yes. You didn't wait to get my hiring pack in. You asked me for names right away.
Right.
You didn't wait to call them. You didn't wait on me to call them. You called them. You drove it. You set the appointment. All right.
And then I invited you on your own appointment.
Right. Invited me on my own appointment. That's exactly right. Invited me on my own appointment. And then it was up to me. Now, you had no way to know. I didn't know you were going to call those people right away or what the deal was on that. And at least I don't remember that. And then you set the appointment. You didn't ask me what time I was available because no. It might not have worked out. You just said it.
I said it.
You were going to go whether I was going to go or not.
That's right.
And there's a lesson in that also, by the way. And so then it was set at 8 a.m. Well, I had a decision to make. The decision was, okay, do I have Tom go on his own and I just stay on my family vacation? Or am I really serious about this? And I determined I was serious about it, so I let my family know and the in-laws know I'm leaving. And so I left after dinner that night, drove back, got a ticket. I remember that because it was late at night. So I got a ticket on the way back. I think I got back to my house at 1 a.m. in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, and the point was at 8. We went over there.
Yes.
And the appointment went fantastic. In fact, the guy says he's in.
On the spot.
On the spot. And I'm like, wow.
I remember you were having trouble between
us. Yeah,
because we was with me and us was. And you were just trying to figure all that out. And the guy said yes. And he got up and he walked away from us. It went over to the wall in his office.
Took his sign.
He had a sign for the company he was with off the wall, turned it sideways, and dropped it in the waste can right in front of us.
Yes.
He said, how quickly can I get a new sign? And I remember looking at your face. You're like, you've got to be kidding
me. Oh, I remember that. Yeah, it was something. And I also remember this. We leave the appointment, and we're driving through McDonald's. And I remember back when we ate McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
And it was probably 9:30 or 10 o'clock, something like that. And I remember saying, if this is going to be this easy, we're going to make a fortune.
I remember that. It's crystal clear. And, you know, you do something like that, and you know everything's going to be different from there going forward.
Yeah.
But we had one other thing. We had a leader that was constantly stretching us.
Oh, yeah.
He wouldn't let
you. I didn't have any contact with him at that time.
I know. Yeah. But he was stretching me. Yeah. And what I did next is I got you into that inner circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to your original question, you know, how you move from that. Is people don't move in that direction, say, okay, I'm going to go build a big team or I'm going to go do whatever on their own. You or your leader, if you're capable of it, you do it. But if you're not, you work with your leader on it and you've got to drive it. I wasn't capable of driving it because I made a decision I wanted to do something different and I was going to have the next 5 years be better than the last five. And I wanted to be in the team building business, but I hadn't really been in big time team building, and the system I was in that I was doing the recruiting and training and bringing people on board, anybody that had any good, and I was a pretty good trainer, they all quit because they didn't want to work for me. They wanted to run their own deal. So that's why I was more predisposed to personal production, because I kept losing. In fact, the number one reason I came here is I saw a way to solve the issue of if somebody makes it, they get to have your contract.
Right.
And maybe we'll discuss that a little bit later. That was a really big deal. In fact, that is a big deal. And so so you don't all of a sudden wake up and say, okay, I'm gonna go do this all on my own. The leader, either you or your leader, has got to drive it, and you drove it and somebody was driving you. And when I say drive it, let me back up on driving. I don't think you can really push people. And I don't think you can pull people all the time. What you do is you run at a speed and create a draft. And as you're drafting, you're reaching behind and people are following you. And if people need a little help, you reach back and grab their hand and pull them up with you a little bit. And that's what you did. So what happened was I gave you those names. You called them. You pushed it. You locked me in. Essentially, you locked me in.
Right.
I saw it worked. And then all of a sudden it was Katie bar the door. It was like, okay, let's get it on.
Well, then we'd have a little bit of sign of the times. If it was today, we'd be having webinars and different calls.
Well, yeah.
Back then we had meetings and we had regular calls. And I'd get you on a couple conference calls once in a while, and you'd be like, wow, that's incredible.
Yep.
And then I'll never forget the meeting. You and a couple other guys went with me down to Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and we got to sit in the guy's office who we were all working with,
mm-hmm.
and he went on and on about what we were going to do and how big it was going to be. And I remember both of us sitting there going, can you believe that we get to sit here and we're part of this now, and that we get to have mm-hmm. this kind of exposure to this kind of leadership and vision and strategy all kind of rolled into one?
It's interesting. I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about that meeting, and I remember a few other guys that were in that meeting that just didn't catch it, which I thought was interesting. I think it's interesting now. I understand more now why now they didn't catch it, just because of who they were. But at the time, it just bewildered me. Like, they just wouldn't get on with the program. And I think we're in those times now. I think we're in the same, you know, the same wide open marketplace. We've got a great vision laid out. We'll be laying out, I should say. And I think it's the same, sort of the same atmosphere.
Well, I think that right after the, you know, the turn of the decade of the 90s, the economy was funny. You know, we had just started this war thing in Afghanistan mm-hmm. and Iraq, and President Bush was the president, and so everybody kind of liked him, that we were taking a tough stand. But wars do funny things to stock markets and economies and how people feel about job security. And
mm-hmm.
and so it was just all of a sudden this vacuum got created where the stock market took off simultaneous with everybody feeling bad about their job and unemployment and all these things. And so there was like this shift to entrepreneurism. And so it seemed like everybody we talked to, if we just would talk to them and get them in front of this machine, they would say yes. And then when you rolled into that, some of the successes we were starting to have and some of the cash flow months we were starting to have, I remember when you first got started, one of your goals was to make $100,000 and get mm-hmm. your ring. And Peggy, like a lot of wives, was very supportive of your dreams, but also very...
Show me the money.
Well, yeah, looking at the reality and saying, hey, we got families, you know, we got kids here. They need to eat. They need to go to school. And you need to make some money. And so one of the first conversations we had about this, Peggy said, look, you know, Bill makes $75,000 a year.
Why don't you tell me the exact conversation in my basement?
In your basement. And she said, that may not be a lot of money to you, but that pays our bills. And she looks at me and she takes her two fingers, puts them together and says, you better be right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. She goes, you know, you got really excited about this, but you better be right. And I walked up to you and I said, we need to make this happen or she's going to kill us both. And you know what? Whether it's said or not, I think every spouse feels exactly the same way as they watch their spouse get excited about this and wonder how you could escape from where you've been, the other kind of opportunity or business, and go into something, and they see you be excited. But then what you did and what we did together is we sat down and said, if you'll do this, you can make $100,000 really mm-hmm. fast, if you'll see that many people that fast. And then once you've done that, then we're going to be freed up to go listen to our leader here and go recruit the planet. We can do both at once. Talk about that for a second.
Well, that's exactly what we did. One thing that I think separates a lot of people, you know, that go on and do some big things from people who don't. And we can talk about attitude and you know, things like that. But one of it is you are, I am, I can think of a lot of other people. We're predisposed to action.
Yeah.
In other words, taking that step and moving forward. And we put a game plan in place and we worked the plan. And it wasn't perfect and it was imperfect. I mean, I remember when you know, we stuck a lot of business in the system and we had a lot of clients coming in and recruits, and this was all manual papers. I remember I didn't get paid for almost a month.
Right.
And
getting the company started.
And so this was October 92. And
when you're focused on your dreams though.
Yeah, that's it doesn't
bother
me.
You're like you see way beyond the little challenge you're having right now.
Well, I looked at you and I remember the conversation. And I didn't say, hey, I'm not doing another piece of business, another thing until I get paid. I didn't say that. I said, hey, dude, we got to get paid here. And then kept moving on.
Right.
And then you looked into it.
Right.
And, you know, got it
resolved.
You got it resolved. And I remember they forgot to turn me on for advances, I think. And so in the first 90 or 120 days, it was October, November, December. I remember sometime in January, I hit actual $37,000 in cash flow. right. on a 35% advance.
Right.
And that was big. And that wasn't because I was something unbelievably special or anything like that. It was, we set a lot of appointments and we worked hard.
Right.
And I didn't let some of the initial challenges derail me. And that I see it derail so many people.
Well, there's always challenges. I mean, yeah. To me, a bigger challenge is being broke or being a limited opportunity. But if you're going to go do something big, then that means you have a lot to learn. And you got to learn how to do business with who you're doing business with. And between those two things, things aren't perfect for a little while you're getting started.
I wasn't. The other thing was I wasn't like most people that go on to do big things. You don't get focused on the little things. You're focused on the big things, which is making your dreams come, and building something big. And one of our other leaders said it perfectly. Don't let temporary setbacks kill your long-term dream. Don't let temporary setbacks derail a career and a great future. And so we didn't have that, and everything always works itself out. And we ended up, I remember a guy came down that I was prospecting, and I remember he lived in Toledo, and he came down with his buddy, and we were creating a little bit of a buzz, and he goes, "I heard you guys aren't making any money." And that was his quote. I said, right. "Oh, really?" I went over to my filing cabinet and pulled out a whole stack of commission checks.
Right.
And he started going through them, and there was an 800 and some odd dollar check that wasn't cash because I forgot to tear it off and cash it.
And I remember that.
Yeah, it was in there. So anyway, there's a point to that. You make something happen, and you start making some money, which is not making money for money's sake, making money because we help clients here. Well, that says a lot in of itself because that's proof it works.
Well, you know, one other thing, Bill, and I'll remind you of this. I think that we were so focused on the most important decision you make is who you join, not what.
Oh, yeah.
And when you had the right sort of alignment of leadership, we used to say alignment creates velocity. And we felt like we were in perfect lockstep and sequence with our leader. And so it just took everything you and I had done, and it magnified it in one way, but it also made us more magnetic in another because we had him and his magnetism in front of us, and we were a certain degree of success and magnetism, and us together were always better than us apart. And when you put all three of us in a line, nobody could say no.
A lot of overlapping leadership there. Well, and the other thing is, you just mentioned something very important. In fact, we forget that sometimes. The number one decision you make, I believe, is who you go in business with.
Right.
And do you go in business with, you know, people in a company of integrity and somebody that's going to help you and has your best interests come first? Or do you go, and I'm not slighting corporate America, but yeah, corporate America reports to shareholders. That their job is not to take care of you, only if it takes care of the shareholder, which, you know, I get how all that works together, but here it's so directly related. And if you become a servant leader here, there's no place you won't be able to go.
Well, and I think the growth challenges you have in the beginning is because you're learning something new, and so much of it you bring on yourself. But at the end of the day, you just your body won't let you blame yourself. So you think this company, blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, chance you have of anything happening that you won't be able to overcome. And little small growth challenges are so overcomable. I mean, they're just something you can, you take a certain percentage of your time if you're growing, and you just allocate it over to addressing those things.
You want to mostly concentrate. In fact, concentrate all your time and get obsessed with being a big leader of a big team. And that's what we were focused on. Yeah, I think back of all the things going on. I don't even remember most of the stuff, but I do remember, you know, growing. And I remember the income increasing each year. And I remember all the great people we've picked up. And I also remember what we were trying to accomplish. We were going to do something big, and we ended up doing something big, and we've built a great company. But compared to what we're going to be, we are just, I believe we are a fraction of what we're going to end up being. And not so much because of what we're doing. We've got our game plan. We're going to knock it out. But I think the industry has just not lived up to what it could be. There's some great companies out there. We have great product providers, and they've caught the vision. And one of the main reasons they've caught the vision of what we're doing is because they see what the landscape of the industry is. And that's why they're so excited about being in business with us. So let's get obsessed with, you know, like a lot of you are already, but if you're not, get obsessed with being a big leader of a big team. And there's nothing you won't be able to accomplish if you do that.
What do you see for the future? What do you think about the next 5 to 10 years? What's your business look like?
Well, I think it's right now we are, I think, in the golden age of, I'll call it the money business in general, for a number of reasons. One is the population is bigger than it's ever been. For a number of reasons, you know, I used to think the baby boomer, you know, was the end all. Right. You know, you get 76 million baby boomers, but now you got Generation Xers and millennials, and those markets, you know, the millennial market's bigger than the baby boomer market, right, which I never thought we'd ever see that. We never even talked about that when we started.
No.
So we've got three huge markets, and then you've got an industry in flux. You know, 90% of the recruiting into the industry is done by less than 10 companies. It didn't used to be that way. And so there's not a lot of new blood coming in the industry. So you have a marketplace that's increasing, and you don't have an industry that is growing to be able to match the market. And then you have this whole, what I call the Uberization of industries. You know, when you think about, Tom, we've talked about, and you specifically have talked about, you know, the largest taxi cab company in the world now is Uber. You know, it's not taxi. 42% of the taxis in New York City are idle.
Right.
Who would think that? You know, the largest hotelier in the world is Airbnb now, I believe. And so you've got all these industries that are now being disrupted, you know, by technology. Well, you don't think that's happening here?
Well, we found a way to blend high touch and high tech.
That's right.
We talk about it all the time. How do you see that? How does that, what do you see for the future with that?
High tech and high touch?
Yeah.
Well, that is the future. Whether we like it or not, that is the future.
So you don't have a choice. You can't just do it the old way.
No, I mean, there isn't a choice. You know, it's sort of like I saw an ad of taxi cab drivers. I'm not criticizing taxi cab drivers. Keep that in mind. I saw an ad of the taxi cab drivers in the union, you know, holding up a sign anti-Uber.
Right.
You know, and protect our jobs. Well, that doesn't do any good because that kind of change is coming, and it came. And it's going to continue to come, and there's a lot of industries that are going to be disrupted by it, and we are too. The question is whether you want to be on the front end or the back end of it. And you know, I don't want to get run over by it, and we're not.
No.
But the one thing about the money business in general, and this is not going to change for most people will still spend more time reading the sports pages than planning their financial future. And there are parts of the money business that are commoditized and parts that aren't. The parts that are commoditized are definitely going to be online. The parts that aren't commoditized, where you're actually doing some planning, you're trying to create some financial literacy, people need to be pushed a little bit in that direction, they need some hand-holding, that's never going to change. Technology is not going to fix that. What technology will do with that is make it easier for people to do it. But you're still going to need an individual to help them with that. Because the minute anything gets complicated, what do most people do? They shut down and go do something else.
Right.
For most people. And so that's why you have high tech and high touch. Now, what that is going to allow, you know, and especially with what we're doing, is it's going to allow you to do things way faster than it's ever been done in the past. We are seeing success stories now where, and I believe we'll have people hit. And not to talk too much about money here, but it took me 6.5 years, you know, from when I turned in my hiring pack to cross $1 million in income here. I think when people really get into this, and as we've unveiled some of the other things, you're going to have people do that within 2 years, probably, maybe possibly sooner, but it's going to be so much faster than it's ever been. And that's because you can accelerate everything with technology. I mean, you think about what we had to do in the old days. I had to talk to you on the phone. First of all, I had to find you. That's
right.
Number one.
Right.
So you had to pick up the phone. Then we had to have a conversation. Then you wanted to see something, so I had to mail it.
Right.
You had to get it in the mail. Then from the time you said yes, I probably had to fly and go see you.
Right.
Right? Or invite you into a meeting, which is still good. Invite you into a meeting. And then we had to actually fill something out on paper, send it into the company, wait a little while to get your code number. Right?
Right.
Then it took you a while to get your test done.
That was manual.
That was all manual. Yeah. And then when you finally did some business, that was all manual.
You got a check mail to you.
Yeah, it's crazy. Everything is just done, comparatively, it's done at warp speed now. Unbelievable.
It's all streamlined and it's just ready to go.
Yeah, I can instantly get a hold of people in a text message now.
Right.
Or a podcast. Or a podcast,
you know,
right?
This can be driven out to people. They can listen to it over and over again. They can ride around in their car to and from appointments or to and from the office. And so many people do that. What a great tool this has become.
One thing I want to really point out, and I hope everybody listening realizes this, there is a sea of change going on in the money business right now. Not only from a product, regulatory, all of that, but also from a technology perspective. There is a lot of change going on. And rest assured that we are in the forefront of a lot of that. Now, are we in the forefront of all of it? I'm not really sure because I don't know what all the change is going on, but there's a lot. And we're going to make sure we stay in the forefront of that change. And so when you start thinking about doing things faster, doing things quicker, doing things more efficient, doing things easier, technology is never going to replace the human part of the interaction with something as personal as money. That is not going to happen. But don't get left behind on this. Do not get left behind.
You know, I totally agree, Bill. I can't tell you how much I look at the things that we've done that caused us to have a success over the last 25 or 30 years. And when I think back to, like this morning at breakfast, we looked at the video from 1995 that you and I were on.
That was a great video.
We look like we're 12. But we were so bold as to get that video done. We weren't great speakers. We didn't have a lot of camera presence. We weren't professionals at all that. But you know what we were? We did it. We just charged full speed ahead, and we sent that to people. And you know what? They look at that and they go, wow, these guys are on a video. This is serious.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that era. And nowadays, we've got a chance for our leaders to come to Atlanta and get filmed and do the same thing, just better.
Well, I think it's absolutely amazing is a good word for it. But it's not just amazing. It's very forward thinking. Which makes it amazing on what you guys have put together in Atlanta. I mean, to have our own studio down there.
Right.
And it's not only to have our own studio. How about this? To have access to the studio.
Right.
To be able to
24/7.
Yeah. And have the competent, immensely talented and competent people down there to put together things. And so all of a sudden, it reminded me of when you introduced laptops.
Right.
You know, to the company and the technology. And I remember sitting down with somebody and doing, instead of me doing the illustration for them, I had the client do it for themselves.
Because you had a laptop there.
Because I had a laptop.
Yeah.
Because they were doing it themselves, they felt like they could do it. And that even made recruiting easier.
Right.
Because they said, oh man, I could do that.
I had somebody the other day send me a text and tell me they sat down with somebody they were trying to recruit. And instead of sending them a video, they showed them that we have videos, just showed them our system.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the tour of that is really what we did all those years ago. And just the appearance of being technologically advanced and having tools like that and systems like that. And I have to tell you, even though, you know, I've had a big hand in doing this, the team we put together is incredible. The wording and the visuals and all that stuff. I mean, that's 30 plus years of experience at a very high level, doing it with not only our company, but with our team. And knowing what to say and how to say it, and I just think that as we go forward, we've got so many things we can do that are going to put us in a position to be able to change the industry, to change the way the world looks at the money business, to always be in the front of that, and whatever high tech is necessary, whatever high touch is necessary, we'll grab it to make that lead to the high volume that's necessary to become successful.
Well, when you asked me at the start of this about what we saw over the next, you know, at least what I see over the next 5 years, you and I talk extensively, so I know you already know on that. But for everybody's benefit, you know, this next 12 months, and actually we are ramping up to it, but the plan we're going to put together, and we'll discuss this in a separate podcast over the next, for 2018, is going to be absolutely flat out amazing. And you are not you are going to want to be a part of that. Guaranteed, promise you're going to want to be a part of that. You'll be able to change your life, build a whole brand new, improved version of you with that game plan. And it's not just, you can have a game plan and you can have all the great dreams in the world, but if you don't have a system and if you don't have tools and if you don't have leadership to make that come true, and all of those things are important. You can't just do it with leadership. Now, can you get something done? Obviously, with just leadership, absolutely. But if you don't have a system and if you don't have the tools to make that system work, when you put all that together, leadership, tools, system, and a huge market, and throw in a heavy dose of aggressiveness, in other words, you pursuing your dreams, you'll be amazed at the end of 2018, you know, what your business and what your life will look like. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that for me personally, for what I'm trying to do personally. I'm excited about it for our team, and I'm excited about it for the company. I think it's a big deal for everybody.
Well, I totally agree. I have to tell you, Bill, you know, it's hard to believe that we've blinked and 30 years went by. 30 years, 30 Christmases, 30 summers. I mean, just the time has flown by. Our kids went from being little to being adults on their own now. Yeah, and they're in the business. So we got the wealth wave of the next generation coming along. But I just want you to know how much I appreciate you, and I appreciate our years together and our history. But I most appreciate that we've always had our eyes on the future and always had our focus on where we're going to head. And watching you become not only successful, but become an inspiration to so many people and an example of success in all the right ways has been just one of the real pleasures of being in this business and of my career. So I appreciate your time today, and thank you.
I feel the same way about you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're going to knock it out. I think this is one of the great partnerships of, I think, of any business.
We simply cannot miss.
Yeah.
When you take our collective strengths and how we do things a little different but also very similar, it just always worked. It's mm-hmm. it's just magic, and I feel like we're gonna take that magic to a whole new level as we go forward.
Agreed.
All right. Well, hey, this has been Leadership Now, the official podcast of Wealth Wave, with our special guest, Senior Executive Vice Chairman Bill Mitchell. I look forward to having Bill on here again very soon. We're going to do a lot of these together. There's a whole lot more to be said. You can't talk about 30 years behind us and 30 years ahead of us in one little podcast, but we're going to have a lot more of these together. So thanks for listening today. If you like our show and you like what you heard today, then you can go to wealthwave.com/podcast and see more about what we're doing here with these podcasts and some upcoming shows we have. You can also leave a review on iTunes. And we'd appreciate if you do that to help to drive everybody to this method of communicating. This is the most modern way of communicating that exists today. You know, almost 100 million people listen to podcasts on a monthly basis. And we're so excited to have this now be a new tool for us and be able to go forward and do that. So you can join us each week and sometimes more than once a week. And you're going to hear about the topics you're going to need to grow, not only just as a leader and an entrepreneur, but the tips you're going to need to be successful in the financial business with WealthWave. So thanks for being with us today, and we'll see you again really soon. Thanks for listening to Leadership Now, the official podcast of WealthWave. If you like our show and you want to know more, check out wealthwave.com/podcast, or you can leave us a review on iTunes. Join us each week as we talk about the topics you'll need to help you grow as an entrepreneur and succeed in the financial business with WealthWave.